RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. I am Jeff Crushell. The con man is here keeping us on track, and we are your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, or if you have a topic you'd like us to investigate, let us know. We may dedicate a segment of the show, maybe even an entire episode to your idea. So check out our website, crushperformance.com. You can email us, info@crushperformance.com. If you're on Twitter, I don't tweet a lot. But when I do, it's probably something that I find interesting, or maybe it's an answer to a question that somebody's asked. At Jeff Crush is our Twitter handle. And if you're on Facebook, the Talent Grid is our group. Go in there, apply, we'll let you in. We're just hooking up everybody to the world of human performance. If you want to go back to our podcast, maybe check out our past episodes. We've got years and years and years. We're going into our 12th year here. And you can go to iTunes, which is now Apple Podcast, or Google Play or Stitcher. Punching Crush Performance, and all of our archives are there. So go check that out. You know, in the world of sport performance, there's a lot to be learned. There's a lot of science being applied there. Well, because it's a massive industry. The great thing about this is a lot of the research and science that's being applied to our high performance athletes is trickling down to the developmental levels. It's also expanding out into the general population in terms of health and wellness. And there's a lot of aspects that do cross over here. You know, yoga, range of motion, and meditation have become a real big part of the sport performance world in the last 5-6 years. And at the onset, it was met with some skepticism and maybe some uncertainty, but it's really become a mainstream part of the performance world. There's a lot to be learned. And one of the great byproducts of this are all the experts that we're getting coming out of this area of the performance world. We're joined now by Dana Santas, the founder of Mobility Maker. Her website is mobilitymaker.com. Dana is also the yoga expert for CNN. Dana, thanks for coming on the show again. It's great to have you back. And just before we went on the air here, we were talking about back injuries, back pain, and the fact that the majority of the population will at some point experience, you know, some form of back discomfort or disability. And a lot of it's preventable. And it can be linked back to this all-important area of the body called the pelvis. Aligning and stabilizing the pelvis is all important. I thought it was a great conversation, and maybe we could start there.
Yeah, so I urge people to start to look at the mechanics of their hips and their pelvis to have a better understanding of what might be influencing causing the back pain. So tight, if you have super tight hip flexors, if your hamstrings are seeming as though they're really tight, you know, you have trouble crossing one leg over the other, so you've got tension in your hips, then start to look at that. And if we're loosening that up, does that start to alleviate the back pain? But even more so, the one thing that I always come back to, and people who know me are familiar with this, is breathing. And people say, wait a minute, you know, I should breathe better for, you know, to treat my lower back pain. And the answer is absolutely, because your diaphragm, and most people don't realize it, but it has two pretty significant attachments to your lumbar spine. And it has a longer, thicker attachment actually on the right side. And depending on, they've looked at cadavers, and it can be from L1 to L2 or L1 to L4. It differs in people, but it's a longer, thicker attachment. And so when your breathing is bad and that muscle starts to become more tense, it's going to pull you more into your right hip, and it's going to lead to more tension in your body. And so one of the quickest, easiest ways to start to loosen that up, and also it runs through your hip flexor. So when the psoas is getting blamed for all of that tension, A lot of times it's not just the psoas. It's the psoas and the diaphragm both really tense and dysfunctional. So you start to take some long, deep breaths and actually begin to use your diaphragm again and get it in a better position. And people can, you know, immediately feel that their back is loosened up and they think that it's witchcraft, but it's not. It's just the way that the body works. So that's where I always start. I always start there, see if we can get a little bit of relief. And then that's put you in a better position to start to work on, can I get some more hip mobility? Can I get my pelvis to start to move again so that those muscles aren't locked on?
Perfect, Dana. Hey, listen, we know that it's predicted about 80% of the population will have some form of back discomfort or injury or issue at some point in their lives. You know, one of the things that typically people will do when they start getting, you know, a sensitive back or sore back or experiencing back pain is they'll shut it down. And that's not necessarily the way to go, is it?
No, it isn't. And of course, instinctively, that seems to make sense. And we've been told for the longest time that's the best thing for us. But research, increasing research is showing that it isn't, and that it actually can increase your risk of re-injuring your back, because your back is eventually going to get better. Even if you just go on complete bed rest and you do nothing else, eventually it will start to feel better. But research has shown that the people who end up, and I'm using air quotes that you can't see, but fixing their back through bed rest, they are much, much more likely, and I want to say that the percentage was like 80%, more likely to re-injure their back than the people who actually healed it through movement. And that only makes sense because they're using, you know, corrective exercise in most cases. We hope that they're doing movements that are corrective exercise that are addressing what the problem is to fix their back. And now they've strengthened it and they've created stability and mobility. So, you know, they're preventing injury that way. But the people who just, you know, wait for it to stop hurting and then start to move again, they're more likely to hurt themselves.
Yeah. And Dana, it's an ongoing battle, isn't it? This is something you need to develop and then maintain. But it's something you could do, you know, while you're watching your TV program in the morning or in the evening. It's something you could do in a short little program before you go to bed at night. There's the strategies you can use to work this type of work into your daily schedule.
Oh, of course. But people make excuses and they just want to come home and sit on the couch. And chances are they're sitting in one hip on the couch in the same spot on the same side. And they can't figure out why their back hurts. And, you know, but you're right. It's just proactive strategies. Starting to breathe better. Get your rib cage in a better position. Know that you can actually use your diaphragm. Understand its influence on your lumbar spine. And then making sure that you're able to move. And even when you're just standing up, being more aware of your posture. And that doesn't mean throwing your shoulders back. That's not it at all. It means, am I keeping my weight all over on one side, in one hip, on one side of my back? You know, am I contributing to jacking myself up? And a lot of times when people start to become aware of that, and especially with athletes, they'll say to me, when I'm in the weight room, I can hear you all the time. Is there more weight in my right foot? Do I have my right foot turned out? Which, and I always say the feet are a window into what's going on in the hips. If the right foot is turned out, but the left one isn't, that means that chances are your right hip is now open. And if you're going to squat in that pattern, what are you doing? You know? So just becoming more aware in your daily life. It doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm just going to set aside this 10-minute time to do my back exercises. Let's just be more aware all of the time. But yes, if you can set aside 10 minutes, I'd like that. But that awareness helps.
We're talking with Dana Santez, the founder of Mobility Maker and the yoga expert for CNN. You know, you branched off into the area of professional sports. You're working with pro hockey teams, pro baseball teams, pro football, WWE. You know, those big monsters in football and WWE, it's surprising how agile and acrobatic these guys are. But to keep them healthy, we know core is important. Also, the range of motion these big human beings, these big beasts have is incredible, but it's also trained. So Dana, when you're working with the big athletes, like the big human beings on the planet, what's your approach with them? Is it any different than what you would do with your regular athletes or your regular clientele?
Well, it's the same focus, really, as everybody else. I just want to help them move better and feel better in that movement. And you would be surprised. If you watch the WWE and if you watch football, you actually wouldn't be surprised. I mean, these guys are super mobile, but they also have the stability to support that mobility, which is what keeps them from being injured. And but it takes work. I mean, it takes work to be that big and not, you know, be immobile. So I do like we work on dynamic warm-ups before lifts and active recovery after lifts, but things that are just going to keep facilitating their mobility despite the fact that they're giants.
And this has a massive role in injury prevention. We're always, there's two main focuses that we have. I mean, when we're really designing performance programs, number one, first and foremost, is injury prevention for sure. But performance outcomes are always, always one of the main objectives. You know, we always say, look to the pros to see what they're doing, because there's probably a good reason for doing it. So there's a lot we can learn when we look at what the pro athletes are doing, because, I mean, their bodies are their business. But I think every person out there should take heed, because, you know, health is one of the most precious commodities on the market right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of like injury prevention, things that I think everyday people don't generally think about when they're watching their favorite athletes, you know, get basically smashed on the field, or, you know, on the ice, the NHL players getting slammed into the boards, and the WWE guys. I mean, it's intense. Like, it's been a few months that I've been able to work with them, and it's a completely different sport than anything else I've ever experienced, because they're actually looking out for their opponent as well to make sure that they don't truly get injured, because I know that this might burst the bubble of some people, but it's not real. So when you know, a guy is throwing himself into the other guy has to not only keep himself from being injured, but he also is trying to protect the guy who's throwing himself on him. It's amazing. But going back to how do we prevent that kind of injury, making sure that they're not only mobile, but stable. And that's why I'm not a huge fan of the word flexibility. People say that to me all the time. Oh, Dana, you're out there getting all the athletes flexible. And I cringe, because to me, and I know it just may seem like semantics, but flexibility makes me think about like the ballerinas and the people who are getting their leg way up over their head, but may not have as much of the strength and stability to be able to, you know, be in that position and then get, you know, smashed. So we have to think about, is the rib cage in a good position? Are the scapula? Let's take the NHL player getting smashed into the board. If he has a really good breathing pattern that, you know, and we can, how many breaths are we taking an hour, like, to maintain that pattern? If he has a really good pattern that's keeping his rib cage in the right position, the scaps now are in a good position because they have no choice but to ride on the rib cage. He's positionally as stable as he can be, which also then facilitates the mobility through his shoulder joint. Now, if you take that player and he gets smashed up against the boards, he may still experience a traumatic injury to his shoulder, but it's not going to be as bad as the guy who's got really jacked up breathing. So now his rib cage is pulled up. His scaps don't have the convex position that they need on the rib cage. They end up riding up higher than they should be. So everything's already in a dysfunctional position, and then he gets smashed up against the board. The trauma that he's going to experience is going to be a whole lot greater, and that, you know, the degree of injury he'll experience will be likely way greater than the guy who was in a more stable position. So those are the kinds of things that I'm looking at. You know, it's not only do you move well, but are you positioned to move well and to be able to absorb, you know, shock and force?
Yeah, that setup it totally makes sense, Dana. That setup is so important. You know, when you look at the outcomes that you're trying to accomplish, whether it's in sport or just staying healthy on a day-to-day basis. And with our aging population, this is a very, very important conversation well outside of sport, correct?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, it really makes me happy. We've been going to the Y during the summer, with the kids because we don't have a pool. And I see so many people, so many older people in the gym at the Y. So not even just these silver sneakers classes, which are freaking adorable, but at the gym, at the Y, when we're walking by, I mean, I'm seeing clearly they're in their 80s, you know, out there doing the right thing. And there's emerging research that shows that they need to be lifting weights. Have you seen that video of the, like, I don't know, 88-year-old grandmother deadlifting?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Amazing.
It's awesome.
So,
yep. I want to be I want to be deadlifting when I'm 88.
Me too. Yeah.
I think my goal.
All the people who say that deadlifting is bad for your back, they need to watch the 88-year-old grandmother deadlift probably more than they can. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's interesting to see, you know, some of those classic, you know, compound lifts, multi-joint lifts are actually very, very good for the core. And you know, there's a big shift again from what we might call traditional thinking when it comes to abdominal or core stability. You know, the old crunches and sit-ups, though there's still maybe a little place for them. It's really not the way to go anymore. We're looking for more functional stuff. And that's why you're right. Movements like the deadlift or the sumo squat, you know, where the body's actually under load and has to stabilize, those are turning out to be, you know, almost better options for people now.
Oh, yeah. And I recently, I've started doing and having my clients who didn't already do this, but hip thrusting. I had the privilege of speaking at Summer Strong again this year, and Brett Contreras, I don't know if you guys have heard of him. He's known as the glute guy.
Yep.
So he was speaking there and we became fast friends because he's pretty sarcastic and funny, but he's very bright and all of his stuff, as much as he's known as the glute guy, and his Instagram is just a mass of pictures of women's butts that look really good. But you would think, oh, this guy, you know, he's just cornered the market on this and he's exploiting it. But he does so much research and he's so smart and he understands how it all works together, you know, and he's not just isolating glutes. And he talks a lot about the core. And I have just found that with so many of the athletes that I work with who have issues with glute firing, as beautiful as their glutes might look and as high as they might sit, a lot of times that is a massive anterior pelvic tilt. And those back extensors that are constantly turned on, and then also their hamstrings are compensating for a lack of glute firing. And it can be really hard to get them out of that and to be able to inhibit the overactive hip flexors. And I found that adding some weight with the hip thruster, with the hip thrusting it's amazing. I really enjoy it too, because I've also seen that after doing that, then what that has then contributed to my own squatting and deadlifting. So it's amazing when you can find your glutes, and any tool that helps us do that is awesome. And so, you know, I'm a big fan of like glute bridges and those kinds of exercises, but putting some weight on it and doing the hip thrust, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it is. And you mentioned something, Dana, that is incredibly important, not just for our athletic performance, but for throwing athletes, for running athletes, just for movement in general, but also for the general public. To have a good aligned pelvis is so important for sport outcomes for sure, but just for overall general health. And so, you know, those muscles that you really work and stabilize and position the pelvis, you have to pay some attention to that.
Yes, you do. And I've said this before, my clients hear it ad nauseum, but the feet are a window into what's going on in the hips.
Yeah.
And it's very few and far between that when feet are turned out, it's an ankle thing. It's usually showing me exactly what's happening in the hips. And in a lot of cases when you have, and it tends to be like a right foot turnout, which means then you've got the right side of the pelvis pushed back and the left side pushed forward, which means now you're more anterior dominant on the left and posterior dominant on the right. And I mean, this can wreak havoc on all of the movement patterns that, you know, the fundamental movement patterns, if you're not aware of that. And so the first part of it is just making guys aware when I assess them. I always joke that the biggest part of my assessment is when I first see them walking in towards me, and when I'm just sitting there talking to them and they don't know that I'm watching them, because then they're not thinking about their movement. I can see where they tend to hold their bodies, and you can generally tell when they have a pelvic rotation, and then you start to put them into movements. And if you don't make them aware of it, then you can see it even more. But yeah, watching the feet, just where you're standing, it's usually a big clue into what's going on in the hips.
Yeah, it sure does. And you know what? I'm always amazed, you know, working with our throwing athletes, the quarterbacks, the pitchers, and even the golfers, you know, it's really incredible to see how, you know, that anterior pelvic tilt or an abnormal pelvic tilt can impact the function of the shoulder girdle as well. This thing is connected head to toe. There's no question about it. But I'm always truly amazed when that pelvis isn't in a adequate position, how it impacts the outcome or the performance of almost every other part of the body. It's fascinating.
Oh, yeah. It can be fun to start to unravel all of this and like really show clients and empower them with the information about this is why this is happening and this leads to that. And so, like, if you take the anterior pelvic tilt, and so you've got the pelvis pushed forward and then, you know, the butt sticking up in the back, you end up with this open bowl kind of syndrome, because now the rib cage lifts up and flares in the front. And when it lifts up, like I said previously, you end up with scaps that are in the wrong position, because the scapula have to ride on that rib cage position, and they really need a convex area. And when you end up in that position, you end up with a flattened thoracic spine, which means that because the rib cage is pushed forward, now the scaps are like, well, if we sit a little higher, so if we ride up a little higher, now you've got upper traps involved to hold them in. And all of this that I'm describing up at the top is all happening due to the fact that you were in an anterior pelvic tilt. And then if you have a rotated pelvis, which I had mentioned earlier, right? And when so many of us, and we live in a right-handed world, even my left-handed athletes, so often I find that they're right side dominant in their hips. And so you end up with your center of mass pulled into that right hip. And so now your pelvis is rotated to the right. Well, you're not going to walk around kind of sideways. So you, unbeknownst to most of us, then we counter-rotate on the top. So now you rotate from right to left on the top, and you've got your left shoulder kind of thrown back because you've kind of coiled yourself to find a neutral, and it's crazy. But I'm a nerd, so you can tell I'm getting excited about this, but it's really crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is crazy. You know, I get fired up about this too, because so many, you know, issues that athletes or people in general are experiencing are actually an easy fix if you know what to look for. And that's why conversations like this are so great, Dana. So if people want more information or to get a better understanding on what we're talking about, mobilitymaker.com is the website. And you've got a lot of great information there as well.
Yes. And I also have a 30-day Breathe Better to Move Better program online on Train Heroic. And there's information about that on my website. But I just released that a couple of months ago. And it's pretty cool.
Excellent stuff, Dan. Appreciate it. Hey, we'll look forward to talking to you soon.
All right, great.
All right, mobilitymaker.com is Dana's website if you want to get more information on her and her great programs. We want to thank her for coming on the show today. And I'd like to thank you for tuning in. If you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, or if you have a topic you'd like us to investigate, let us know. We may dedicate a segment of the show, or it may be an entire show, to your topic. You can find us at crushperformance.com. Our email is info@crushperformance.com. Get to us there. And if you want to listen back to this show or get to the Crush podcast archives, all you have to do is punch in Crush Performance at iTunes, which is now Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher. It's all there. So have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you next time on Crush Performance.
This is Jim Fannin, America's Zone Coach, and I'm excited about bringing my new podcast, The Jim Fannin Show, to RadioInfluence.com. Each week, we're going to talk about the zone and how this mindset can help you in all facets of your life. I'll give you all the tools you need to change your life and help guide you to become your genuine, authentic best self. With the only proven blueprint for attracting the zone mindset, I've helped transform millions of lives. In my 40 years of experience, I've coached CEOs and senior executives from 350 of the Fortune 500 companies in 50 different industries. I've coached professional athletes, Olympic gold medalists, Hall of Famers, all pros, all stars, entertainers, and so many more to help them gain the tools and techniques to create a life of simplicity, balance, and abundance. And now it's my privilege to bring these methods to you every week, along with some of my champion good friends as special guests. If you want to get in the zone in all you do, check out the Jim Fannin Show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.